Commission meeting. Oh, sorry. Let's start over. Okay, let's come to order. And we are, this is the October 10th PUD Commission. Welcome, everyone. And let's get started. Our first item is comments from the public. So, T, do we have any?
Yes, if anyone from the public would like to make a public comment, please raise your hand or state your name.
Will, can you hear us? Because it sounds like your headset is not working.
Yeah, the headset's not working. We're using the mic on the camera.
Okay.
Okay. And you hear me okay?
Yeah, it just sounds like it's not through the headset.
Yeah. Okay, we had a comment. Go ahead, whoever that was.
I don't believe we have a comment. I'm not seeing any comments.
Any others? I don't see any hands up. I assume we don't have any more comments. Okay, good. All right, agenda revisions. Sean, do we have any?
Yeah, can we add for business item A, BPA outage on 10-7-22 discussion, and then everything else will just move down one item.
Okay. All right. So moving on to our approval of consent agenda. This is items that were sent out previously and everybody got a chance to have a look at them. So do you have comments, questions, or motion?
One question on the delinquent accounts. Are they staying about stable, or are we seeing any increases or decreases?
Actually, Rick, we are getting very close to where we were prior to the pandemic. So we're seeing things pretty stable right now. We've been doing disconnects for non-payment for about a year now, and that really sparked a lot of the arrearages to go away with the ARPA money and the federal money that's been out there, along with LIHEAP. We've seen our delinquencies come way down, which is it's been really good.
Good news. Thank you, Sean.
Yes.
Yeah.
I move that we approve the consent agenda.
I second the motion.
The motion is seconded to approve the consent agenda for October the 10th, 2022. All those in favor? Aye.
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 Good. Motion passes. So moving on to business items, our first item is the BPA outage.
So we have Ben on the line here with the dispatcher during the event, and he's going to kind of give an overview of the timeline of the events that occurred on Friday. But before he does it, I just wanted to let you guys know the PUD has been partnering with PNNL and the North Olympic Development Council. And we're going to participate in what they're calling an Energy Futures Conference that's scheduled for the beginning of next month in November. And in preparation for that meeting, we actually reached out to BPA to encourage their participation in that event and also to discuss projects and enhancements that they've made over the years to improve resiliency on the peninsula and specifically out west. So in light of substantial federal funding, that's become potentially available for resiliency grants, we actually proposed three specific projects to BPA to consider, especially for out west. And we expect a response to our inquiry from them by the 25th of this month. And just to kind of give you an overview of the projects that we relayed to them, one was to substantially increase the narrow Port Angeles to Sappho right away. The second one was to construct a parallel 115 kV line that would have automated switching to immediately restore power in the event that one of the lines was lost. And the third project we suggested was to upgrade the Port Angeles 69 to 115 kV bus intertie transformer, which would ensure full peninsula redundancy for loss of one of the 230 kV lines that feed us from the north. I believe this would be advantageous for you all to allow us to draft a letter that would be for your signature that would we would all sign reiterating those projects, and we would forward it to the BPA administrator. And I believe that the level of engagement from you commissioners would definitely elevate the importance and urgency of our West End reliability to senior BPA management. And within the letter, we will also include specific outage history, the ongoing adverse health and economic impacts to the vulnerable communities out west that are affected by these frequent outages. So we just wanted to kind of get your take on signing a joint letter. And if you guys are amenable to that, we would have a draft for you at the next meeting if that would work for all of you.
Sean, have you considered making this a joint letter with the other utilities on the peninsula?
We didn't consider that, but we can. One thing that when we do potentially go out for some grant funding, we would specifically ask the three tribes on the West End to sign joint letters in support. But we can reach out to the City of Port Angeles and Jefferson PUD for a joint letter.
Well, either a joint letter or give them a template of ours and suggest send a similar letter.
Yeah. Yeah, we can do that, Rick.
Yeah, in addition, you might get Wapuda involved and WAPEG, maybe even the PPC, to kind of push on that rope.
Yeah, we could send a copy of the letter that you all execute to all of the organization and ask for their support. I think that would be a good idea.
So are we in agreement that we send that letter? Or we look at the letter and then sign it? I'd give it a thumbs up.
I give it two thumbs up.
Great.
Yeah, I guess my view is I agree with all that, but I guess I would really like to add some sting to the letter somehow and suggest, and we're going to have to do some brainstorming with the staff here to maybe come up with some ideas, but what extra steps can we take for immediate remediation in terms of lost income or lost power and so forth like that in terms of an impact? And I know there's processes where we can, you know, people can fill out a claim and stuff like that. But the West End is getting hit pretty hard. And at the end of the day, it's always our responsibility to get that power to them. And so I would really like to see us do some brainstorming between now and the finalization of this letter and put in this letter some ideas or suggestions or demands, whatever you want to call them, whatever we think we can get away with, to BPA to say we insist that, you know, under certain circumstances that we want immediate reimbursement, or we're going to set up a charge account to where we are going to immediately reimburse, you know, in mass customers who have an outage or something like that. Now, what I just said is just some of the brainstorming, but I would like us to put some more thought into those immediate, you might call them punitive actions that we take with BPA to put some fire into this, because a lot of these projects we've talked about before, and yes, it's great that the grant stuff is out there and the potential for that, but this could just drag on and drag on, business as usual. And anyway, I guess that's my take, Will.
Why don't we think about putting some statistics in there with respect to how many outages on the West End we experience and how that racks up with other Bonneville customers, and try to frame it in an equity.
Rick, this is John. That's exactly what we plan to do. We plan to demonstrate that the line to from Port Angeles to Sappho, but specifically the line between Silverado and Sappho, is, we believe, over a five-year period, the worst performing BPA segment that actually serves large numbers of preference customers. And that's going to be the emphasis. We've been tracking BPA outages. For example, in the last 5 years, we've had 12 BPA outages unplanned that total 8,200 minutes of outage time. And when you look at the planned outages, you add another 5 outages with almost 2,000 minutes. And we believe that's the worst performing BPA circuit, at least major circuit serving large number of customers. So that's going to be the focus, and hopefully they'll take action. I mean, there's even a potential for regulatory action in some schemes, and we can imply that. All it will take is we don't want to go litigation, but that's always a potential, or litigation by some of our customers. So we're gonna put the thumbscrews to BPA and lay out the data and the comparables and write a strong letter. And hopefully with the grants, whether it's via BPA or our utility making a request for reliability enhancements that BPA would perform, we definitely want to get into discussions with BPA how to make that happen.
Right. I would also suggest that we copy furnish this letter if it makes sense, and we agree at the end of the day. The letter be copied to Congressman Kilmer and Senators Murray and Cantwell.
Good idea, Jim.
Yeah, that's a very good idea. We'll copy that letter, and we will make it available to a number of our customers as well.
Yeah, I think I would add the legislative delegation to that as well. Okay, so we've got a thumbs up on that, so we'll see that letter, you think, at the next meeting, Sean?
Yeah, we'll have a draft for you to review. I'll try to actually circulate it to you as soon as we have it done through email, so you can have an advanced copy of it.
Yeah, if we agree on it, we can either have a special meeting or we can come in and sign the letter. We need to really pop on this one.
Yeah, I mean, if possible, I'd like to get it in the mail at the end of the next meeting. So I'll definitely try to get you an advanced copy so that you can have time to review it.
Okay, great.
And Sean, one other thing. Maybe you could send a note to the Macaw Tribe Council and let them know what we're doing here. The email that Nicole sent out, I don't think helped much, just saying that it was a BPA outage. And so we need to tell them we're going to take extraordinary circumstances here to try to move this forward as quickly as possible.
Okay. If you have a specific email address that you want me to send that to, Jim, can you just forward that to me? Otherwise, we'll send it directly to the council information that we have.
Yeah, that would be the executive director, I can't think of her name off the top of my head right now.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll do that.
This might be a little counterproductive, but I think I would ask BPA to do a root cause analysis of why these outage durations are lengthy and frequent, and propose some short-term remedies beyond duplicating the line and so on. For example, They could send an advanced team up here by helicopter, find the source of the outage while the crews are en route, and then they could jump right on it. And I know we help with that, but I think it's BPA's responsibility. So,
yeah, that's definitely something we can incorporate into the letter too, Will.
For back to long term. We should really put this as a goal that long term, or even when I say long term, what I mean is we should stay focused on getting this second line up to the peninsula. I think for the resource adequacy of the peninsula, we need that second line.
Okay, any more on that topic?
Yeah, I sent you all a timeline through email on Friday as things were occurring, but Ben Phillips is on here too if you guys have any questions specific to the timeline. So I have Ben here to answer any questions.
Oh, commissioners.
If you guys don't have any, then we can move on to the next
item. What was the total outage time in the Nia Bay area? And was it just Nia Bay or what else?
It was the entire West End.
Okay, that was my power outage too, I guess.
There's a lot of misconceptions out there. One is that the BPA crew addressed the planned outage, performed their work, packed up, went home without energizing the system. I don't think that's, hopefully that's not true. But anyway, we need to probably dispel some of that. So.
But yeah, no, that's certainly not true. The the planned outage was restored 5 a.m. Friday morning as planned. The unplanned outage didn't occur until right at about noon.
Yes. Okay. Good. Thank you.
And Ben, the seemed like the summary I read was after they did their walk along the line trying to discover, you know, what was causing the outage, that they weren't able to discover anything. Is that true?
That is correct, yes. They patrolled the line. We were successful in getting them to put a helicopter out. They patrolled the line. Our standard practice is when this happens is knowing that it takes quite a while for BPA to respond. We send out PED crews as well. Port Angeles crew starting from the west end or from the east end here at Silverado, working their way west, and then a Forks crew starting at Southville working their way east. So that hopefully we can find the problem before they get here. We probably had patrolled about two-thirds of the line ourselves by the time their helicopter and their linemen were on scene, and then they patrolled the entire line themselves, and we did not find a cause for the outage.
So there was no wasn't a recloser on that circuit?
That line is set up such that if there is a fault, the Port Angeles breaker will open up. Excuse me. 2 seconds later, that breaker will close. If the fault still exists, it opens up again, waits 10 seconds, and then sectionalizes at Silverado, dropping Sappho out. So the Port Angeles circuit breaker did open up twice. So something certainly caused it, but no cause was found.
Okay, thank you for the update.
Yes.
Yeah, I think this is not a matter of walking the line or even driving the line. You've got to go into the right of way on forest roads and then come back out to 112, drive down, go into another. So it's a lengthy process, and hopefully we can get that done. But then the other thing is that they're stream crossings. It's quite a convoluted process.
Yes, thank you for that, Commissioner, because that's absolutely true. In some cases, the access, excuse me, might only gain them visibility to just a few structures. So, yeah, they're in and out from Highway 112 in many different places to access the entire line. It takes quite a long time. And I also would add that having an outage like this and not finding a cause is unusual, but it has happened before.
Do they employ not drones, but, you know, helicopters, the little miniature stuff, that we could use those to get those out quicker? Or can we do that, to put a camera on one of these helicopter drones and fly the line ourselves?
I'm not aware that BPA does. I couldn't speak to that. Whether or not the PUD would like to take on something, probably is doable, but that would take more discussion from management.
That sure seems like a viable alternative, though, Jim, with respect to the sooner you find where the short is, the quicker you're going to get it fixed. And with a drone, it seems like you could fly the line a heck of a lot driving up and down through the logging roads.
One thing that hobbled us somewhat in this circumstance was that our normal BPA operator local was on vacation or not available. So the relay in Port Angeles, we're able to get a distance read from it. It tells us how far out from Port Angeles the fault is, so we know how many miles, and the BPA structures are numbered with this mileage. So once we get a read, we can have a pretty good indication of about the location of the fault. Since our local operator was not available, their closest operator was dispatched from Olympia, so it took him, whatever that is, 2 to 3 hours to get up here to be able to read the relay to give us that distance information.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I think a lot of other utilities are using drones. We might talk to them and see what their experience has been.
Yeah, what we've been told about the drones, and we obviously need to look into this, is that you have to maintain line of sight with the drone. And so it would still be a lot of going in and out of the line, but it would be, you're right, it would be quicker than what we've been doing. But to meet FAA guidelines, I believe we have to maintain line of sight with the drone as it's flying. But it's something we can definitely look into.
Yeah, Sean, the last time we looked at it several years back, you had to maintain line of sight, which made it very restrictive, but that may have changed. We'll need to look at it again.
Yeah.
Maybe we need to talk to our AE about the delay in getting information of where the outage was. you know, it seems like if someone is gone, they should have a backup that's closer than coming up from Olympia.
Well, there's also automation nowadays. This 21st century, you might be able to get automation from this location to an Olympia location to actually read a distance read. That's a matter of setting up communications.
But, you know, then maybe, you know, our first shot across the bow should be with our AE, letting them know that we're not happy with the amount of time of this outage and that something needs to change.
Yeah, that's a normal point of contact, but I would like to see this go all the way to John Harrison, but you're not talking about those as being mutually exclusive, so I think you're right.
One thing to keep in mind, even once we've found the fault, found the problem, we're still at the mercy of BPA crews arriving on site to do anything about it.
Yeah. And we've already went through this thing of training our people to work on that system or whatever. Anyway. Okay. Anything else on that?
Hey, Sean, you might consider, when you write them a call, an email, or send them the link with the voice recording of this conversation.
Okay.
All right. We'll move on to appointing the general manager to the EDC board. John?
Yeah, so in your board packet, there was a memo from myself to you. As you know, we've been working hand-in-hand this year with Colleen over at the EDC and helping her with promoting economic development here in the county. And we've even developed a GIS-based capacity map for her and her staff to use in helping recruit potential opportunities to the area. So she was talking to me last week or the week before and said that they're going to have a potential opening on their executive committee. And she was asking me if I would be willing to serve on that. And so Jim is currently our delegate to the EDC. And in order for this to work, I would have to be his replacement so I could be on the board to the EDC. And then the board could nominate me to the executive committee. So just wanted to make sure that before I asked you to make that nomination, that Jim was okay with it. And if he was, then I would ask that you all nominate me to the EDC board so that we can have somebody from the district on the executive committee.
Yeah, I think I support that because a lot of the stuff that they get into is at a level of detail that I'm not always facile with. And I think if Sean was there more personally at that detail level, we could, you know, answer questions for them quicker and so forth and translating it through me. But I did call, I did talk to Eileen, Sean, shortly after you called, and we talked through this. And I said I still want to maintain a strategic presence with the EDC in certain meetings like this one in November, take a role and part in and you know, kind of keep the high-level focus on the strategy of where we're headed with, you know, all the various initiatives within the PUD and economic development.
I don't think there's any restriction on the number of participants that you can have there. So.
No, I don't mean I'm going to stay on the board. I'm just telling Colleen I'm going to feel we're going to keep talking.
Yeah, that's fine. Okay, what do we want to do, a formal nomination? Or?
I just need a motion and a vote, and we'll record it in the minutes.
Okay, I'll move that Sean Worthington be the member on the Executive Development Council.
I second.
The vote is seconded that Sean Worthington be appointed to the EDC Board and Executive Committee. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Now, I believe the board has to vote you onto the executive committee. Is that right, Sean?
Correct.
Okay, well, you've got our blessing to move on if that happens. Okay, any questions or comments on that item? All right, our next item is the 2023 budget presentation, Ruth and Sarah. So this sounds like it's going to be a long one.
Well, we'll take as long as we need, and hopefully that's not too long.
Well, take as long as you need. Okay, good.
Okay. Let me get my screen shared. Hold on. Okay, can you all see that?
Yes.
Okay, great. And then I just need to do one other thing here. Okay, move that over there. Okay. Okay, to start, first of all, good afternoon, commissioners. I wanted to first explain the budget document you received in your board packets. This document is often referred to as a budget book by municipalities, cities, and counties, and it's intended to provide a comprehensive, transparent, in-depth look at the budget while also providing narrative that helps communicate our strategic goals and organizational priorities. This is phase one of the document, and we do have plans to expand over the next couple years. Early in the process, we recognize this needs to be a district-wide effort, so we'll be looking to the other leaders here at the district to help write our story and create a single source of the district's budget vision. We're really proud of this document, and we hope it does effectively showcase what it takes to successfully operate Public Utility District Number 1 of Clallam County.
Now, Ruth, this kind of looks like an annual report. Is that kind of a...
You know, there are similarities, so I could see how that would appear that way. But really what it is just our next 12 months of operations.
Okay.
We've provided definitions, assumptions, summaries of, you know, the various projects that we'll be working on, as well as, you know, what you would typically find in a budget as far as inflows and outflows.
And as opposed to the annual report, which is looking back, this is a planning document for looking forward.
Yes, excellent distinction.
And one that we can utilize for internal functions, you know, over the course of the next budget year.
Yes. Okay, so
little problem with that audio, but that's fine. We can move on.
Oh, sorry, what was that?
Yeah, I guess that was Sarah there. It's kind of garbled, the audio.
Okay. I think.
Was anybody else able to hear me okay? Ruth, were you?
I'm able to hear you just fine.
Okay. I heard you fine.
Well, okay. Maybe it's just me. Okay. Thank you.
Commissioner Purser, would it be helpful to reach out to our IT folks?
Will, you're muted.
That's fine. I think I can understand what's being said.
Okay, great. With that, we'll move on to presenting our 2023 budget proposal. So you've met Sarah, and Sarah and I will be presenting 47 slides, but please don't hesitate to stop us if you have any questions or need clarification on anything. And we have a lot of information to provide you today, so we will be relying heavily on our notes. This graphic should look familiar. It represents our typical budget timeline. And before I go over this, I just wanted to mention that the district updates and approves its strategic plan in July in time to help, you know, govern and guide the budgeting process. With that, the timeline here gives you an overview of the budget process from start to finish. The budget kicks off between the end of May and the beginning of June. Managers are provided templates of their current year O&M line items as well as their current year's capital projects. Managers then take the time to review the year-to-date results of their operations and projects and then anticipate the needs for the next budget year. It's a collaborative effort, and the result is a thorough estimation of each department's planned spend for the next year. Finance compiles the personnel budgets, and we factor in any known changes to positions, any estimated increases to both salaries and benefits, and any other assumption that might affect the employee budget. Once all the department budgets are submitted, the preliminary budget is compiled in late summer, early fall. The revenue requirement is then determined. Any necessary rate changes are estimated. And of course, we factor in those impacts to our cash reserves. So what we're presenting today is the district's collective proposed budget for our 2023 operations. Working on the budget is challenging. It's a balancing act to keep rates low and keep reliability high. We have to carefully plan the work we do so that we don't put too much pressure on rates in a single year, but also provide safe, reliable services to our ratepayers. On the left side of the screen, you'll see the district's budget objectives. The district is guided by the objectives of our strategic plan as well as the financial policy metrics. And I'm just going to touch on the objectives here. Provide stable rates. We opt for small annual rate adjustments to provide rate stability for our customers. Be financially responsible. We ensure financial stewardship through transparent, effective, responsible management of the district's finances. Ensure reliable supply. We make every effort to provide dependable, high-quality services to our customers. And as mentioned, we also incorporate the financial metrics from our financial policy. On the right side of the screen, you'll see the district's budget challenges. Kilowatt-hour sales are difficult to budget for. Between 2014 and 2019, kilowatt-hour sales declined 3%, and that's even after being partially offset by customer growth of 4% in that same time frame. Since COVID, kilowatt-hour growth has been flat. Overall, between years 2014 and 2021, the decline in kilowatt-hours for the average customer has been 8.5%. And that decline we largely attribute to conservation. As we all know, weather is a challenge for us too. Storms cause outages and depending on the severity can cause major damage to our utility plant. A recent example of how weather impacts our utility happened out west in CQ where a huge landslide took out a critical water main. Another challenge is increasing costs. We're anticipating a number of our insurance premiums to increase, including liability, cybercrime, as well as health insurance. Inflation is another factor and is driving costs up in general as well. Capital is an ongoing concern and a priority for all three systems. To sum it up, system improvements and replacements are critical and necessary to ensure system reliability. Mandated compliance due to legislation such as CETA continue to impact the district. We implemented our low-income program last summer and continue our long-term planning for carbon compliance. WASDOT fish passage projects have also become more frequent and have created some very high dollar unplanned expenses for the district.
Now, Ruth, that you talk about CETA, what's the impact of the Energy Independence Act? You're still at 15% renewables, I believe. So.
You know, I'm going to defer to John or Sean on that.
Well, this is John. So basically, the Energy Independence Act required us to have 15% renewable, excluding hydro, and we have achieved that through the implementation of renewable energy credits, and that is basically a requirement that's already taken care of. There's no additional cost in that respect. We are obligated to adhere to a conservation potential assessment and the adherence of conforming to all cost-effective conservation, and that will ramp up over the next several years.
Thanks, John. Okay, these next two slides, I'll go over the assumptions used for our year-end projections as well as the assumptions for the 2023 budget. Our year-end numbers for 2022 are projected based on several assumptions. For inflows, electric sales are higher, and that's primarily due to an extremely cool winter and spring. We are experiencing a warmer fall, but we do anticipate a normal weather winter. But again, overall, sales are higher. Customer contributions are higher than budgeted due to ongoing construction. BPA, EEI funds, energy efficiency incentive funds are higher. Part of that is due to timing of payments. Payments we had scheduled for last year came in this year. And we also secured $125,000 from Whatcom PUD, a utility who opts to not use their incentive monies. For outflows, we assumed normal operations and maintenance costs as well as personnel costs. And of course, power costs are proportional to retail sales. For capital, the estimates are based off internal staff projections, and for fourth quarter, Electric is estimating to spend $3 million, and that's for several engineering projects, transformer and meter purchases, as well as vehicle and equipment procurement. For water, the expected spend is just under $1,956,000, with the majority of those dollars for Clallam Bay and CQ work. And we're not anticipating any spend for wastewater. They postponed their one capital project to 23. And I should mention these dollars are just materials and contractual labor and do not include internal labor costs. For 2023, we've factored in the following assumptions. All BPA costs, all PPA assumptions, rather, are based on the BP24 proposed settlement, which includes a revenue distribution clause of $350 million. We are anticipating no significant increases to purchase water. Customer growth is based on our most recent cost of service studies. For electric, we assumed 0.75%, for meter customer growth, and 0% for kilowatt hour growth. For water, we estimated 0.69% for residential and 0.87% for commercial growth. And we're anticipating no change in wastewater customers. Conservation-related expenses are based off the 2021 conservation potential assessment that was presented to the board last summer. The district's cost for employee pension benefits, PERS, remains the same at 10.25%, and that's a percentage of taxable pays. We do anticipate significant insurance increases. Cybercrime continues to be a point of concern. Cyber criminals are using increasingly sophisticated methods to get into our systems, and our cyber insurance premium reflects that ongoing concern. So we do anticipate a budget over budget increase of 56% for 23. On a good note, our IT department is taking measures to increase employee awareness to help mitigate these threats. For liability insurance, we're anticipating a budget over budget increase of 59%. And as mentioned earlier, our healthcare costs are rising, and we're anticipating an increase in both employee premiums and costs to the district. In general, personnel increases are driven by inflation. Also in 2023, the collective bargaining agreement is up for renewal. The new contract will be effective May 1st of 2023. The rate adjustments assumed for the for budgeted sales are as follows. Electric rates will, let's see, for electric, effective April 1, 2023, energy rates decrease 1%, and there will be no change to the basic charge. For water and wastewater, effective February 1, rates increase 4.2% and 5.9%, and that's a weighted average increase. And then lastly, the district's financial policy metrics are incorporated into our forecast to provide us financial parameters. Okay, CETA assumptions. The Clean Energy Transformation Act prompted the CETA fund, which we established in 2020. We're continuing to rate fund that reserve by making transfers of $575,000 per year. Again, these funds are intended for a CETA compliant project, and I'll have to defer to John or Sean if you want to discuss that at any length. Our low-income program, also mandated per CETA, was put in place last summer with the main purpose being to reduce energy burden for low-income and vulnerable populations in our service area. This program has been operating for over a year now. OLECAP has been doing a great job administering the program, and we anticipate a continued successful partnership with them. The grant monies are increased 3 to 5% every year to demonstrate progress. To recover the cost of the program, there is a line item assessment on each customer's bill. When the funding increases, the line item increases proportionately. Effective this last October, or October 1, I guess that was 9 days ago, the line item increased from $1.04 to $1.07, and it will increase proportionately to our 2023 funding, October 1st, 2023, to $1.17. Low-income customers who have applied for assistance through OLECAP, as well as tribal members, are exempt from paying this assessment. Now we'll move on to reviewing each specific system. Starting with electric, I'll review the highlights of the inflows and outflows for 2023 with 2022 projections and 2021 actuals for reference. For electric's inflows, 2023 sales are projected lower due to the board-approved reduction of 1% to the kilowatt-hour rate. Other is down as we're expecting a reduction in BPA EEI funds. For FEMA, we are expecting a reimbursement for two storms from earlier this year. Customer contributions, this has been elevated since the beginning of COVID, but with inflation and other economic impacts, we do anticipate a reduction in 2023. There's no borrowing projected for next year and therefore no bond proceeds, and our 2022 bond proceeds will be used up by the end of this year. This totals $77.9 million for electric's budgeted inflows for 2023.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
the RDC, how is that going to be handled? Is that going to be a deduct on our bill, direct payment, or how is that going to be over time? Well, how does that
It's December through September. So it'll start this December, Will, and it's not the same amount each month. It's proportional to the size of the bill. I can get you all a detail of what the credit is each month, or what the proposed credit would be each month. I believe Tyler has those figures right now we can share.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks, Sean. Okay, for electric outflows, this is That was a great segue. Purchase power for 2023 is significantly decreased based on the anticipated impacts of the BP24 rate case and revenue distribution clause. The increase to labor and benefits is driven by inflation, the upcoming collective bargaining agreement, position adds, and an estimated increase to healthcare premiums. O&M and admin is escalated based on insurance increases and just overall general cost increases. Taxes are proportional to electric sales and are primarily comprised of Washington State's public utility tax and privilege tax. New this year, though, we are including the city pass-through taxes, and those taxes are reflected here in all 3 years and are also included in other of electric inflows. And that just helps to show the true ins and outs of our tax transactions. Capital is up in 2023 as we anticipate a large broadband project. This project will be funded primarily by the anticipated NTIA's Middle Mile Grant. For this project, we budgeted $1.3 million in materials. This project will allow the district to build out its broadband infrastructure to Beaver and Forks and reach those unserved, underserved areas in our community. Also included in capital are our transformer costs, for which we budgeted an additional $1.65 million, which is a 200% increase over last year's budget. Transfers to funds is a new line item, which was broken out from operations, maintenance, and admin, and that was so that we could see those transactions separately. The large transfer amount in 2022 is due to refunding both the CETA fund and the rate stabilization fund, which had been used to defease our 2014 outstanding bond issue. For 2023, the transfer line includes additions to the rate stabilization fund per our financial policy. Our balance should be 6% of budgeted revenues. So we'll be transferring $180,000 for that, and then we have our annual transfer to the CETA fund of $575,000. And new to the district, in 2023, we will establish the Middle Mile Grant Reserve Fund of $2.45 million. And if awarded that grant, the district is required to set aside 25% of the project budget. This totals $75.6 million for electric's budgeted outflows. This slide shows all the department budgets for the last 3 years and the year-over-year change in those budgets. And I'll try to make this as quick as possible. For accounting, the decrease is mainly due to restructuring. Payroll was moved to HR. Auto shop, the increase is primarily due to moving capital projects from operations to auto shop. Billing, normal cost increases. The board's budget, that increase is primarily due to moving board-approved association dues to the Board of Commissioner budget so that we'd have one spot for all those costs. Broadband, the increase is due to the potential NTIA Middle Mile Grant project and the related purchase of fiber materials of $1.3 million. Communications and records, the increase is due to restructuring. We combined communications and records and moved personnel and all related costs to communications to that combined budget. Customer service, the increase is primarily due to a position add. Facilities, this is an entirely new budget and it includes costs from finance, materials and warehousing, and operations. Finance, the increase is due to the funds transfer for the NTIA Middle Mile Grant Reserve Fund and the pass-through portion of city taxes. General engineering increased primarily due to increased salaries. General manager decreases due to restructuring that I mentioned earlier. We moved out the communications and government relations position and all those costs and combined it with records. HR increases primarily due to assuming the payroll position as well as the added position of an admin assistant. IT increases primarily due to moving all software and software subscriptions to the IT budget. Materials and warehousing increases primarily due to increases in transformer costs, which we talked about earlier. Operations, the decrease is primarily due to restructuring and moving both personnel and facilities related costs to our new facilities department. Power supply, the decrease is due to the estimated revenue distribution clause impact of just over $5 million. Risk management, increases are due to insurance expenses. Safety, the decrease is due to reduction in salaries, and that's because we had an overlap of positions this year due to succession planning. Transmission engineering increase, again, due to an addition of a position for this department. It was an in-house electrician. Utility services decreased due to reduced salaries. We had 2 FTEs, and we reduced that department to 1.5 FTEs. Another important thing to note that is if we completely eliminate power costs, or I should say the power supply department, the year-over-year increase to the remaining budgets is 17%. And with that, I'll turn it over to Sarah to go over Electric's planned work and their debt payments for 2023.
Okay. Thank you, Ruth. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Sarah. I'll be going over both the capital debt sections for all 3 divisions. To start, I should mention that the figures you're looking at in this section include internal salaries, but not overhead, which is actually a little different than our capital reporting in previous years. We felt that in this presentation it was best to include labor to better assess the scope and the budget impact of the various capital work. All right, so what we have here is a pie chart showing the anticipated capital spending for the electric division. The categories you see reflected are our budgeted capital categories, so this is kind of how we quantify and look at it internally. The largest is being other acquisitions for 2023, and the primary reason for that is the transformers and regulators, which account for 75% of that category, or $2.65 million in 2023. That category also includes meters and infrastructure at $800,000. But as you can see, and as you might expect, it follows pretty closely by distribution and transmission projects, the detail of which that we'll be discussing on the following slide. All right, so starting with distribution. This table shows a combination of both planned projects and groupings of smaller, similar projects. I'll go over the highlights of the more notable non-regular projects and the basics of the planned recurring work. But if you have questions beyond the 1 to 2 sentences I have prepared, luckily we have subject matter experts on the call that can accommodate that. So that said, feel free to stop me as I go through this section if you have any project questions. The list I have here organizes the projects according to the budget impact. So the largest budget impact starts us off. First, you'll see road projects not itemized, which represent utility relocation projects associated with the franchise obligation to accommodate road or highway work. These are those WSDOT projects we previously touched on in her discussion of budget challenges. Budgeting for work that we're required to do yet isn't in and of itself part of our capital plan, but we do know what's going to happen. The next 3 lines are groupings of projects that represent a significant portion of our capital work year after year. Pretty self-explanatory, but they include, first one, engineered cable replacement projects, followed by distribution holes and structures replace or removal, and distribution underground replace or removal. The following lines are larger specific projects budgeted in 2023. They include the SWIM gun nest to 3CRAB 1.0 upgrade, and this is a new project replacing 2,100 feet of aged wire to reduce outage time and improve voltage. It's another project to put in stronger, more reliable line material to support a greater load. Then we have Lake Sutherland V phase extension and upgrade. This phase of the project converts a remaining 1,150 feet section of V-phase overhead line to 3-phase underground from Boulder Road to Lake Sutherland Road. Again, this project similarly should reduce outages and improve voltage. Phase one of this project, so it's going to sound familiar, was completed in 2021. Phase two was delayed this year due to unforeseen permitting, but it's now on track for 2023. And then the next is the Cedar Street Alley Reconductor Project. This project upgrades 2,000 feet of aged wire to reduce outage time and improve voltage. It was originally budgeted in 2022, but was postponed to 2023 due to crew workload. The next line that we have is a reoccurring group of projects that we call Small Capital Emergent in NESC. And the final line includes all other smaller total dollar projects and groups of projects. It includes the Camp Hayden 3-phase upgrade, Highway 101 Hooker Road crossing. There's a couple projects at the Monroe substation for CBR metering and communications and minor feeder upgrade, as well as avian protection, GIS integration, line devices, and LED lights. All right, so on to transmission. So unlike distribution, this table shows mostly planned individual projects rather than groupings of smaller similar projects. So even though transmission assets for the district total around 9% of utility plant, you can see how the scale and complexity of this type of work on these projects equate to a high portion of our annual capital budget. Listed in this table, starting at the top with the highest budget impact, we have a transformer replacement in Nia Bay. The existing transformer is outdated and the new 10 MVA will better serve and improve reliability in the area. The transformer is being purchased in 2022 and planned to be installed in 2023. The next group has several projects that are continued phases or budgeted in previous years. They will very likely sound familiar to you guys. First one after the Nia Bay Transformer is the PA Switchyard and Circuit Switcher project. It's a continuation of a project to install new equipment that will tie transmission lines west and east of the BPA substation. The design and purchase of materials is in progress, but the project itself is scheduled for construction in 2023. The fourth, rebuild and reconsolidation. The scope of this project is to replace old substation equipment and other improvements, but it has changed a few times. In fact, hot off the press this morning, the total dollars here might change prior to our final budget presentation in November. The project is in progress and is scheduled to be complete this year with some wrap-up into 2023. Next one is Highway 101 Staphosis Fork. It is a multi-phase pole replacement project replacing wood transmission poles with fiberglass. This phase of the project was originally budgeted for 2022, but it was also postponed to 2023 due to crew workload, followed by the airport to BPA transmission rebuild and 115 KV upgrade. For 2023, the final phase of the KV upgrade at the central feeder will take place. Phases of this project have been budgeted since 2020. A portion of it was put on hold until 2023 due to coordination issues with McKinley Paper regarding shared transmission poles. Next is the continued work on the Gunstone transmission rebuild. As a reminder, Gunstone is a privately owned timber company that we have an agent through for our transmission. It's another pole replacement project replacing wood poles with fiberglass. It's a project that's been on the budget list for several years now, but the work in 2022 is postponed to 2023. Next is a new project called the Beaver Camp Regulator Replacement. This project is to replace old Beaver Camp voltage regulators with failed indicator lights and equipment. And finally, Nea Bay Circuit Switcher Replacement. The name basically describes the scope of this one. We currently have the circuit switcher on hand and plan on installing it along with the Nea Bay Transformer in 2023. And then the final line is all other transmission projects, including additional circuit switcher replacements, pole replacements and relocations, data enhancements, and others. All right. So this slide here showcases the remainder of capital spending for the electric division. And I'll bounce around a little bit as I cover the highlights of the most significant lines here. The biggest budget impact here is in the line for AMI transformers and regulators. We've already been talking about this quite a bit in this presentation. This line includes significant increases in budgeted transformer costs for 2023. It's $1.65 million more than last year. And as mentioned before, transformers account for $2.65 million of this line. If we go back up to the top of this list, you can see that we have a line for all vehicles and equipment. In this category, we have a few trucks, a digger derrick, an excavator, a back trailer, and a few vehicle add-ons like a lift gate and a welder, compressor, and generator for one vehicle. The back trailer is the only add to the fleet itself. All of the others are replacements. The next line under vehicles equipment is reoccurring customer requested products. They're just requested and funded by customers through service and their engineering, followed by the fourth operations equipment shed. And that is a 60 by 100 foot pole building for equipment and vehicle storage located in the fourth warehouse. Then if you skip down a few lines, you'll see the most significant singular project on this list. And it's the broadband internet backbone to the West Wind that we've also been talking about. As discussed earlier, this project is dependent on being rewarded the NTIA Middle Mile Grant in March of 2023. The district plans to immediately purchase the fiber materials if awarded that grant, which are in the cost represented here. Other projects on this slide include the SWIM microgrid project, substation yard and fencing upgrades at Monroe and Deer Park. That's going to be in one of the other categories. Additional broadband projects, IT spending, capital tools, and other. All right, in this section, we will go over electric debt.
Sarah, this is Rick.
Hey.
I have a question, and maybe it would probably be for John or Sean, but on the previous slide, we had $3.5 million budgeted for transformers, and my question is, do we have these prices tied down? In other words, have we ordered the transformers? My concern is with how much inflation we've seen on transformers, I'm wondering if this is a realistic price or not.
You want to take that, John, or you want me to?
Yeah, so basically the transformers, we have close to 300 or more transformers on order that have not been received after more than a year. We have been getting smaller orders since the summer that are coming to us in the first half of next year, new orders. And those prices have actually come down a little bit. The amount for transformers, I believe we budgeted $2.4 million, and normally we used to budget about $800,000. So I'm pretty comfortable that a threefold increase in our historic cost is probably about right. It all depends on what happens with supply chain issues, the slowdown in the economy, but I think this is our best guess.
You know, you said that we had all these on order. Is the price tied down on those, or does the price fluctuate depending upon when you get it?
The new quotes that we're getting say not guaranteed on the price. The ones that are on order, those prices are guaranteed, but those are probably going to be the last ones that we ever see.
Okay.
So to your point, yes, the prices are subject to fluctuate on all the new quotes that we're getting.
Great. Which okay, thank you.
Not much of a quote.
Are we still buying transformers, which are kind of a compromise on their specifications and so on?
Yes, we're looking at those every single day, trying to pick up canceled orders and such. So yes, we are not using our old standards, which included stainless steel and some other amenities. So we're going with whatever is available.
So what do we anticipate? That that's these could be shorter life or?
Let's say stainless steel, for example, they do have a protective coating, but based on history, we went to stainless steel for areas near the water because there is a tendency for those to start rusting out within 20 years. So, yeah, we're going to have shorter life on some of these transformers.
Thank you.
All right. Next question is, what you are looking at here, the table at the top is electric debt service due in 2023, broken down by principal and interest for each bond issue. New to the list this year is the 2022 electric revenue bond, including the defeasance of a portion of the 2014 bond. So you can see they're still on the list there. As a reminder, these bond transactions from earlier this year saved the district approximately $1.4 million net present value in debt service. The graph below it is a representation of all electric debt payments through term for its $26.4 million of debt outstanding. You can see also how we'll be done paying off each debt by color coding. 2010 will be paid off in 2030, 2014, the remainder of it will be paid off in 2024, 2016 paid off in 2028. 2018 has our longest timeline, so it will be paid off in 2038. And finally, 2022, which will be paid off in 2034. So with that, I can turn the presentation back over to you, Ruth.
Thanks, Sarah. Okay, I'll be going over personnel changes for the 2023 budget. Okay, here we have the categories broken out as position changes, position additions, and any other highlights. Position changes include some promotions. Apprentice linemen and apprentice tree trimmers were promoted to journey linemen and tree trimmer. We moved several operations positions to our new facilities department. The communications and government relations manager, who was formerly in the GM budget, is now combined with records. We eliminated the records supervisor position, and we are adding a records coordinator. The water accountant was moved to accounting. The payroll specialist, formerly in accounting, was moved to HR. We will be eliminating the water wastewater superintendent and adding a civil engineer. Also in water, the coordinator position will be promoted to supervisor, and we will not be backfilling the coordinator. And throughout the budget, there's also a handful of succession planning happening. For position adds, transmission engineering added an in-house electrician. This will eliminate a significant amount of contracted electrician work. Human resources is adding an administrative assistant role. Customer service is adding a customer service support specialist. Water is adding a helper/meter reader position. And in 2022, I mean, this happened in 2022, but it's worth mentioning, we brought a large portion of our custodian work in-house and added two custodians who are now in the facilities department, and that eliminated a significant amount of janitorial contract work. Other personnel highlights, as mentioned earlier, we are expecting large healthcare premium increases, and we have our upcoming new collective bargaining agreement effective May 1st of 2023. Now we'll look at the net impact of electric inflows over outflows and review the 10-year forecast. Here we have the budget summary for 2023 showing inflows over outflows and the resulting net change to operating reserves of $2.3 million. Moving on to the 10-year outlook, just to give you a lay of the land, the first column here shows the year, the second, the proposed rate increase. The third column is our estimated ending operating reserve balance. And to the right of that is our projected days cash on hand and our estimated debt coverage ratio. This projection includes engineering's and operations 10-year capital plan in addition to our normal inflows and outflows escalated with the assumptions you see at the bottom of the screen. One of the largest impacts to this 10-year forecast is the anticipated effects of BPA's revenue distribution clause, which we're anticipating will be over a $5 million reduction in power costs for 23. You can see in the proposed rate increase column that we, as you know, we do plan to forego rate increases for 23, but not only just for 23, but also for 24 and 25. And to keep in line with our strategic objective of stable rates, we don't opt for full rate relief in any one year. Instead, because that would cause, you know, large rate increases in the following years. Instead, we levelize our rate changes to provide rate stability for our customers. Looking at our days cash on hand, you can see that the assumed impacts of BPA's RDC pushes our days cash on hand well above our target of 180 days. Our debt coverage ratio is also impacted. And in later years, you can see our debt coverage ratio impacted by paying off two of our loans. 2016 will be paid off in 2028, so you can see the jump up and our debt coverage ratio in year 2029 to 5.5. And that ratio jumps up again in 2031 because we'll be paying off our 2010 bonds in 2030. And with any long-term forecast, we can guarantee this will change, but based on all available information today, this is our projection and our tentative plan moving forward.
Back on your debt, I appreciate the making a conservative estimate, but how conservative on the scale of 1 to 10, the increase in kilowatt hour sales assumption of zero, that seems pretty conservative to me, especially since the transportation sector will be moving towards the electric, being more electric. Do you think that might be too conservative, or what's your thought on that?
John,
go ahead, John.
Okay, Rich, you're absolutely correct. There will be a point in time over the next decade that we will see significant electric vehicles. We're not seeing that yet, but it will happen. And rather than speculate and just arbitrarily throw electric vehicles in here, then we just assume that it'll be, fairly small amounts to 2032. So, picking a time that starts taking off, we're just not confident. we do know that when it does, we will generate proportional new revenue due to the electric vehicles, and there will likely be an increase, but we think the actual cost of service, the balance between the two, we will make a return that's proportional to the outlays. And in the long run, it, as far as the dollars are concerned, yes, it is conservative. If we generate a higher kilowatt hour and get a return on that, then, yeah, we will have more money in hand.
Well, clearly my concern is looking at those proposed or forecasted rate increases starting in 2026. Not something I would embrace.
Yeah, so basically our cost of service is going to be generally based on inflationary increases in labor and materials, plus the increases in BPA costs, which we assume are 5% every 2 years for power and 8% for transmission. But, you know, those are a guess. And when you look at that, in the end, it will be tending an inflationary increase minus whatever productivity increases we manage.
And just to add to that, Commissioner Pascal, we will be conducting an electric cost of service in the near future. I don't know if we're going to be doing that next year or the following, but I can guarantee these numbers are going to change.
So are we including it here, going above the Tier 1 line and buying some Tier 2?
Yeah, this includes a 10-year forecast from for power, Will.
So we're projecting how much Tier 2 will be in this. Okay.
Yeah, I don't recall what the exact amount of Tier 2 was in the out years. John, do you remember what that was?
Well, for 2023, it's 1.3 or 1.4 average megawatts. And it doesn't grow significantly. Our biggest concern is we're going to get into a new contract, and we still don't know what the Tier 1, Tier 2 breakdown will be. Then you get into issues of augmentation, additional costs for that, whether we do it, whether we don't, or whether we utilize our CETA funds to invest in alternatives. You know, that's you know, right now just total unknowns.
And we still don't know if Bonneville can offer a CETA compliant product either, as well. Okay, a lot of unknowns.
Definitely. Okay. Thanks, John. Okay, here we show the bill impacts after the board approved 1% decrease to kilowatt hour rates. A residential customer consuming 1,250 kilowatt hours per month of electricity will realize a decrease in their bill of about 97 cents per month. Okay, now we'll move on to water and wastewater's budget information. Here we have both water and wastewater's assumption for the 2023 budget. For both water and wastewater, we're nearing the end of our goal to achieve rate uniformity, also known as postage stamp rates. The board adopted system-specific rate increases in 2022 to achieve uniform rates by 2024. Each year is a weighted average increase of 4.2% for water and 5.9% for wastewater. And of course, with 2024 being the last year. For water, we're assuming growth at 0.69% for residential and 0.87% for commercial. And we're assuming no change in customer counts for wastewater. And I just wanted to mention that we are currently conducting a cost of service study as capital needs have become critical to the water system. And now we'll move on to the inflows and outflows for both water and wastewater. looking at water's inflows, highlights for water revenue include a slight uptick in sales due to the rate increase that we just talked about. Water does expect FEMA dollars in 2023 for both the temporary fix and the permanent fix for the CQ main that was destroyed from the landslide last November, as well as for HOCO pump station work. And these monies should continue into 2024. And I just want to mention that Tom and Bowen do continue to pursue grant opportunities and low-cost financing. The loan proceeds you see here of $4.5 million are draws on the 2021 Public Works Board loan, which are at a rate of 0.94%. And again, those proceeds are to help finance CQ infrastructure upgrades. To help offset water's capital budget for 2023, we will be transferring monies from the capital fund to the operating account in the amount of $2.67 million. And this totals $13.3 million for water's budgeted inflows for 23. Water's outflow highlights. Sorry.
Back at the customer contributions seem to increase significantly. Any, did I miss you explaining that?
Oh, you know what? I'm going to see if Sarah might have some insight into that. Do you remember what Bowen had shared with us about the customer projects?
I believe that has to do with the anticipated customer contributions for the project in Carlsberg, Ruth.
Okay.
And the way
okay.
that spread over the 12 months.
Okay.
That, but we
can, thank you.
Yeah, Commissioner Pascal, we can double check with Tom and Bowen.
Great, thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, water outflows. Labor and benefits are higher due to position adds and succession planning, as well as inflationary increases to both salaries and benefits. O&M is escalated again with inflation. We're just anticipating higher costs overall. Debt service is going up substantially due to the 2021 Public Works Board loan, which again is intended to finance the Clallam Bay infrastructure projects. And on that note, capital is up significantly, reflecting all the work being done out in Clallam Bay and CQ, not only for the infrastructure upgrades, but like we mentioned, the main replacement due to the landslide. And this totals $13 million for water's budgeted outflows for 23. Wastewater's outflows are up slightly due to the approved rate increase we talked about. Also in 23, we'll be transferring funds from Wastewater's capital fund to cover the costs of their postponed capital project, a lift station at Sunshine Acres 1. Wastewater's outflows overall are increasing in 23 due to increasing costs and the previously mentioned postponed capital project. And with that, I'll turn it back over to Sarah to go over capital and debt for both water and wastewater.
All right, here we go with the capital section for water and wastewater. All right, so first we have a pie chart that shows the capital spending for the water division. You'll immediately recognize the significant portion of spending that's expected for the Clallam Bay CQ area, which will be discussed on the next slide. You might notice that water's budgeted categories are primarily grouped by system and replacement or new, but they have other reoccurring project types as well. This is a reporting change from previous years, so it might look a little different. We'll still line item out what the projects themselves are. Sewer's capital spending for 2023 consists of two budgeted lines delayed from 2022. And you can understand why I didn't provide a graphic for that. We'll talk about what those are on the next slide. Okay.
At the top of this page, you can see clearly the most significant category here is the work in Clallam Bay CPU. This consists of $3.3 million for the already planned main replacement financed by the Public Works Board loan and $2.2 for the emergency bypass replacement. Remember, these are just budgeted 2023 costs, not the entire project cost. First, the main replacements in CPU East and West 112 and Clallam Bay. It's in the construction phase, and it's the work that's funded by the Public Works Board loan, as I mentioned before. The first part of construction in the upper CPU area is complete, and construction remains in lower CPU and other parts of Clallam Bay. Second, the emergency bypass replacement, as everyone's well aware, the bypass pipe was installed on Highway 112 east of Middle Point in response to the landslide disaster. This project includes design and construction of a new 8-inch water main, which will replace the emergency bypass pipe laid down on the ground surface there, and we expect to receive FEMA funds for this project, which we talked about. The next category is Mount Angeles New, which includes the relocation of the lower pump station. The existing pump station needs to be relocated outside of a geohazard zone. The district is in the process of purchasing a new site from the city of Port Angeles on Golf Course Road. The plan itself includes a prepackaged pump station, a new intertie with the Morris Creek line, and new water lines. Scope for 2023 includes finalization of the plans and specifications and the project construction phase. Other projects include a new reservoir serving Middle Evergreen, a new water source transmission line and blending system in Carlsberg, and finally a study of treatment alternatives for the Haller Wells and an 8-inch pipe on 7th Avenue. Water's capital budget also includes customer-requested projects for Spike Electric, service capital projects, meters, SCADA upgrades, and washout projects, among other things. And then the bottom table, we have wastewater. And there's just two projects there. One is for the replacement of a lower wastewater collection lift system in Sunshine Acre 1, which was budgeted in 2022, and a generic budget category to capture renewal and replacement upgrades for wastewater. All right, the next section will cover water and wastewater debt. Okay. So as with electric, the table at the top shows water debt service due in 2023 broken down by principal and interest for each loan. We've also included estimates for the Public Works Board loans, which we're still drawing on. The graph at the bottom shows all debt payments through term for water's current debt and the estimated Public Works Board loans. This reflects total debt outstanding for water of $10.9 million. Again, water graph shows various loans color-coded so you can easily see when they're paid off. As a recap for water loans, the five drinking water loans are all for various Fairview Water District improvements. There is an intercompany loan for GIS system upgrades from electric to water. The 2019 First Fed loan was for a Gales Edition reservoir cover. And the Public Works Board loan from 2019 was for various pre-construction activities for the Clallam Bay CPU infrastructure. And finally, the Public Works Board loan from 2021 was for CPU Clallam Bay main replacement that we've previously been discussing. And finally, this is the last slide I'll be presenting for you today. Wastewater only has one loan, and they borrowed $68,000 from water to finance a lift station at Sunset Anchors 1. And you can see what those payments look like through term. All right, with that, I'll turn it back over to you.
Thanks, Sarah. Okay, so now we'll take a look at the impact to cash reserves for both water and wastewater. In summary, water's inflows over outflows are consistent with 2022, and the net change in operating reserves is approximately $250,000. For wastewater, the net change to reserves is $62. Here we show the bill impacts to water's various systems after the weighted average increase of 4.2%, a residential customer consuming 700 cubic feet of water will realize an increase ranging from $3.16 to $5.10. And I included this next slide to showcase where we've been with water's rates and how we'll achieve rate uniformity by 2024. Here we show the bill impacts to the various wastewater systems after the weighted average increase of 5.9%. Wastewater customers will realize a change in their bill ranging from a decrease of $2.37 to an increase of $8.36 per month, depending on the wastewater system. And finally, we have our system summary. This final slide shows the overall proposed 2023 budget for each system and the net change to operating reserves. And this same format is what we'll bring to you in November for approval. And at that time, we'll incorporate any changes between now and then. And with that, we're happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Well, real quick, I just wanted to say that Sarah and Ruth have put in countless late nights and weekends working on this, and I just wanted to publicly thank you and acknowledge the hard work that you guys put into this. It's very well done and good job.
Thank you, Sean.
Yes, very good presentation as well.
Thank you.
I agree.
Okay, if there are no more questions or comments, we'll move on to the PPA post-2028 contract discussion. Do you have any new information there?
Commissioner, just to let you know, Commissioner Waddell, I believe, left around 2:45 for a personal engagement that he had, so he's not with us any longer on the meeting.
Okay, thank you. My screen back here. There we go. All right, post 2028 contract discussion. Rick, I haven't got anything to you. I've got a comment here. But.
Well, no, I don't think there were any meetings, or if there were, I missed them.
Okay. Well, just a comment, probably more appropriate to do it under commissioner reports, but I was notified the other day that Bonneville is going to meet with Energy Northwest for augmentation projects, which would all be Tier 1, and this includes other renewables, but also includes small modular reactors. They're looking for 1,000 megawatts of augmentation, so... Just something that will impact contracts going forward. Okay, move on to correspondence communications.
All right, real quick, Will. Rick, did you want to touch at all on that White House Council on Environmental Quality, that CPC article that was in Clearing Up and also in the Laputa Friday Facts?
Yes, this would be a good time for that. I noticed in the Laputa letter or newsletter they send out on a weekly basis that the Council on Environmental Quality is trying to influence Bonneville's rates. The Council on Environmental Quality is a federal agency, I believe, and my understanding is that they're trying to increase Bonneville's rates and have Bonneville fund additional fish mitigation, is my understanding. If you have other information on it, Sean or John, jump in.
Yeah, so how I read it, Rick, was that it's the CEQ, which is the Council for Environmental Quality, and the state of Oregon have made a joint proposal using anywhere from 50 to 500 million or more of BPA's surplus revenues to help endangered salmon runs on the Columbia River, including further study of breaching the Snake River dams. And there's a few quotes in this article from Scott Sims, the executive director at PPC, who says that CEQ's attempt to confiscate ratepayer money completely ignores all established processes which are backed up in statutes in the Northwest Power Act, and is very clear about Bonneville's obligations and the protections of rate-paying customers. So it sounds like if this goes anywhere, that PPC is threatening to pull out of negotiations and use any and all necessary legal means to uphold Bonneville's statutory rights in the Power Act.
So this Council on Environmental Quality, that's just recently been formed, right?
I don't know, actually. It doesn't say.
Yeah, I think it's kind of part of the Green New Deal. But
Okay.
Just a real red flag, though. Glad that we've got PPC looking out for us.
Yeah, yeah. Kurt Miller is also involved, PPC, sounds like a number of other public power organizations are very concerned about this.
Yeah.
Well, this is something that we need to bring to George's. I mean, George clearly put it in his newsletter, but I didn't really say whether they were doing anything about it.
Yeah, I was actually going to email Ryan today and ask him if he had any further insight as to the likelihood of something like this actually going any further.
Since we're not at the table at PPC, Energy Northwest has two representatives that attend those meetings. I'll bring this up and see if we can glean a little more information.
Thank you, Will.
Any other correspondence, communications, or?
No, sir. That was all I had.
All right, Commissioner reports.
Okay. I'm assuming I get to start.
You do.
John and I attended a meeting set up by PNGC. It was having to do with the contract high water mark. And the goal of the meeting was trying to determine whether there's alignment between the folks in the group to see if we could work together on the post-2028 contract and future rate cases. According to PNGC, there are 52 entities that have above high water mark load. Let's see, the issues that she had brought up was that we could potentially work together on is system size and augmentation, tier one system allocation and adjustment to net requirements, tier two product options and including price and terms, and non-federal power integration costs. I think it's a good idea that we participate or continue to participate with this group. John, did you have any thoughts that you'd like to share?
Rick, I think you covered most of it. I think they probably formed this group because they did not believe BPA customers with above contract high watermark requirements are adequately represented at the table. And when BPA changed their critical water, the basis of tier one to the P1030, a lot of customers dropped out. We saw our tier two requirement drop from somewhere like 5 megawatts down to just a little over 1 megawatt. And that may have been strategic from BPA's perspective. It reduced the number of customers who were interested in this. They're also interested in the recalculation of Tier 1 based on requirements. There was a little bit of a discussion about the potential of using above contract high watermark generation to apply to Tier 2 for cost smelting. And that kind of makes sense. Of course, if you do that, BPA secondary sales will go down significantly. So, it's an interesting group. I think we ought to pay attention, be represented at least for the next few meetings to see where they go.
I agree. The only other thing I have to report is I'm wondering if it might be time for us to consider going back to in-person meetings.
We can definitely accommodate that, whatever the commissioners want.
So what's the status of the health department's guidelines? Are they still...
My understanding is that the governor of the state, Governor Inslee, plans to lift restrictions at the end of this month, but I have not actually seen what that means. I read a little bit about it, that some of the things are going to stay in place while some of them are leaving, but I don't know what that has to do with public meetings. We'll need to look into that. We could report on it at the next meeting if you'd like.
Well, you know, there's a real advantage in hybrid meetings. I mean, we can meet in person. People can come to those meetings, but we'll get a wider public participation if we allow people to continue to call in.
I agree that we should continue to do the hybrid.
Yeah.
Would you like the next meeting to be hybrid, so the commissioners and staff in person?
I would vote for that.
Yeah, that's like we're headed in the right direction.
Okay.
That's all I've got to report, Will.
Okay, well, I've been busy with other business, but did get an update from the CEO of Energy Northwest by phone call the other day, and some of this stuff is kind of in flux, so it may be we've got a e-board meeting the last week of this month. We'll know more then. But first, we've been assisting a number of small modular reactor projects. Grant has been talking about X Energy's technology, and they have more or less shifted over to dealing more with X Energy. We're still providing technical support and so on, but that project looks a little iffy for Energy Northwest at this point. The strategy that Grant's talking about is building an SMR and then signing power cell contracts in the future. Now, we might evaluate that as our PUD at some point and see what that's like. Also, the TerraPower project, which is the Bill Gates technology, we're continuing to support that as far as licensing and technical support. And that all that power is going to go to PacifiCorp. So PacifiCorp is also asking Energy Northwest for technical assistance since they have no nuclear experience whatsoever. Then the other project that, of course, NuScale, which is in Idaho, we're still supporting and working with them. But something has popped up new. Energy Northwest has an agreement with Westinghouse for micro reactors. We've got a request from Westinghouse to support a micro reactor. The bad news is it's in Alaska. But anyway, that technology looks interesting because it's walk-away safety systems, which means it doesn't have to be constantly monitored. As far as operations, it's roving surveillance, so you don't have to have a big staff or anything like that. That may be something that in the distant future we look at ourselves here for local generation resiliency and microgrids and all that argument. So anyway, all those things are in the works, and I'll have more on that later.
Will, did you say that it's a walk-away project?
Yes, a walk-away. The safety system is a walk-away. Yeah, you don't have to monitor it constantly.
And that's pretty incredible.
Yeah, it's 5 to 10 megawatts. Pretty small. It's supposedly you can ship it in a container. So.
Huh.
And that project would be for an Air Force base in Alaska, but... You know, there's a lot of settlements and so on in Alaska that are running diesel generators. So there's interest from the state of Alaska in using that technology elsewhere. So that might be a growing business. You've got to handle trying to get staff and all that to Alaska. I'll go in the summertime, but no, I won't be going at all. So anyway, that's kind of an update of what's going on. Any questions? Or?
How do they handle refueling those, Will?
Well, actually, the long-term refueling, so they actually just move it out and move the reactor in place, and they do the refueling off-site. That's comparable to X-Energy. That's the gumball reactor, the graphite ceramic cased U-238, and it's it can be refueled online, so you don't have to shut down to refueling. And the NuScale today is, of course, 12 modules. You take one module out, refuel it at a time. So that big every 2 year refueling thing you've got with Columbia, you know, it's kind of going away for these technologies. So that's another advantage you have. Okay, moving on to staff reports. We've got a review of JST draft mitigation plan. Boeing, are you on?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, there you are. Okay, go ahead.
Good afternoon, commissioners. We've had a lot of information thrown at you today, so I'll try to be brief here. But I just wanted to quickly present some high-level review of the Jamestown Scollums. Let me quickly share my screen here. I apologize. You guys seeing that there?
Yes.
Very good. Jamestown Scollum Triad's comments to the draft mitigation plan for new Carlsberg water rights. This is the cover sheet that you're seeing here. The draft mitigation plan and other works leading to the mitigation plan were developed by district's consultant, Robinson Noble, on behalf of the district in Clallam County. Comments by the Jamestown Scollum Tribe were submitted to Ecology, as you can see here, on the 29th of September, along with a technical review by the tribe's hydrogeological consultant, Mott McDonald. So in addition to kind of reviewing some of the comments from Jamestown Scollum, I'll also touch on some of the points raised by Mott McDonald and briefly discuss where these points are in agreement with works by Robinson Noble and where there's a little bit of disagreement. So as you can see here, kind of a general comment in bold from the Jamestown Scollum here that they lead right off with is that the draft mitigation plan proposal does not demonstrate with enough certainty that impairment to streams resulting from the proposed water right will be offset to an extent that protects treaty resources in the near or long term. So that's a pretty serious issue. Moving forward, some more specific comments to Ecology by Jamestown Scollum Tribe. That Aquifer 4 is not fully characterized and needs more study. Acquiring new water right is premature since the district is currently only using 20% of our current water right for the Carlsberg water system there. There's a recommendation that the district's retail water service area is aligned with the Carlsberg UGA, which we've already been in discussion about with the county. Water use inside Carlsberg UGA will go to sewer, therefore it's 100% consumptive use, and they want to see that accounted for in our mitigation plan. And lastly, the tribe recommends continued exploration of an alternative mitigation strategy that would reserve a portion of the saved water for benefiting in-stream flow. So this is go ahead.
No, I'll save my comment. Go ahead.
Gotcha. So this is a technical review by Mott McDonald. It referenced three previous works by Robinson Noble in addition to the 2022 draft mitigation plan. So this was task 2A. This was kind of setting the foundation for the hydrogeological framework for the Dungeness area there, and specifically related to the fourth aquifer, the very deep aquifer. This was back in 2018. This is just a cover sheet from the well report for that new Carlsberg well down there on the Van Land property. This is technical memorandum task 2E, and this was basically a follow-up to that well development report. This was specifically some follow-up required by the Department of Ecology for some pump testing. So all three of these works by Robinson Noble were referenced in the review. And then obviously this is the mitigation plan that we have, the draft version of the mitigation plan, which has been submitted to the Department of Ecology. So just stepping back really briefly, what's in the mitigation plan? Deeper aquifer, less impairment on the river. So as you can see here on the right, just an image of the bore log for the new Van Land well down there. You've got aquifer one is kind of the first confined aquifer, aquifer two, the second, three, and four is way down deep. So the idea is to shift Carlsberg production from existing Carlsberg wells that are tapped up in aquifer two, and the reduction impairment will be achieved by shifting that production, and that compensates for the predicted impairments of the new water right. So it's basically an offset by reducing the impact, which should generate effectively new water rights for us. So briefly touching on where Robinson Noble and Mott McDonald agree, well, we're both in agreement that we've tapped a fourth aquifer and it's producing water. So that's a good start. General agreement that the transmissivity data derived from the pump tests at the new Carlsberg deep test well and the Weyerhaeuser well are pretty much the same. So Mott McDonald, they've done their calculations. Robinson Noble's done their calculations. And their interpretation of the pump test data comes in on a similar transmissivity number, and transmissivity is basically an aquifer's ability to convey water. So the higher the transmissivity, more water. Both agree that the aquifer test data suggests the presence of a boundary layer, you know, that's going to restrict horizontal flow or decrease aquifer transmissivity near the well. So there's agreement in that, although some disagreement about the details related to that, and both Robinson Noble and Mott McDonald provide recommendations for further evaluation of the hydrogeological conditions surrounding the new well. So where they disagree, and these are probably the most important points to take a hard look at. Robinson Noble came up with a transmissivity about 30,000 gallons per day per foot. They're kind of deducing based on their pump testing and their well logs that this aquifer is continuous, moving to the west towards this Weyerhaeuser well, which is over near the intersection of Kitchen-Dick and Old Olympic, and that there's some flow restriction in other directions. So Robinson Noble's recommendations are get that well online, pump 250 gallons per minute continuously for months and collect real-time data. Take that real-time data for static water level and pumping water level, forward it on to a professional hydrogeologist for their review, and make sure that data is coming in line with the deductions and the assumptions that have come from previous tests. Also, they've recommended monitoring the well water conductivity for any signs of saltwater intrusion, since we're going to be pumping at a water level that's pretty close to sea level or below. And consider drilling an additional 12-inch well to supplement production. So, you know, the 250 gallons per minute is very conservative, and that's what they're recommending that we do initially. They do think that we could produce 400 gallons per minute from the existing 8-inch well that's over there, but we're putting in for a water right that's in excess of 500 gallons per minute. So in order to really match that instantaneous flow rate, we're going to need another well. So their recommendation is to drill a 12-inch well a certain distance from the existing well down there. And then also they noted to go ahead and drill that a little bit deeper, because there's a continuation of that formation that's supposed to have good water-bearing properties. So Mott McDonald, like I said earlier, very similar transmissivity in their kind of deductions and their review of the data. But there's some pretty serious disagreement on whether this aquifer formation is continuous and extensive, which, you know, Robinson Noble thinks it is. So Mott McDonald is basically recommending that we look at revising the existing 2008 groundwater model, basically inserting another aquifer into that model and then recalibrating that model using real-time field data, comparing those results from a recalibrated model to what Robinson Noble has suggested, and then moving forward that way. So what's next? Ecology is not necessarily required to delay approval based on comments received, but Jamestown, Squallam Tribe, and Mott McDonald are both really important stakeholders here in the management of groundwater resources locally. Jamestown Spalding has come to the district, provided us with this information, this feedback, and they've also made the recommendation that we set up a task force, technical task force, for addressing some of these concerns and, you know, further discussing timing and mitigation options. And the district has responded in the affirmative, our commitment to lead that charge. And that's going to probably look like a task force that is separate from the existing Dungeness River management team, comprised of the district, ecology, Clallam County, and Jamestown Squallam.
I think I misinterpreted this, but the Jamestown letter seems to indicate that they are encouraging us to use the LUD water throughout the UGA, but at the same time, they're opposing additional water rights. And that's all subject to more analysis, but am I correct?
Well, they did specifically have a bullet point where their recommendation was for ecology to promote the district's retail service boundary to align with Clallam County's urban growth area boundary in Carlsberg. But yeah, it's slightly in conflict with that, and certainly in conflict with the district's current policy is their suggestion to hold off on pursuing this this mitigation since we're using only 20% of our existing water right. As you know, the district's policy is to you know, make sure that we have sufficient water rights for full build out.
Yeah,
yeah, we're running about a 261 acre foot deficit for that UGA boundary area.
Well, I saw where Jamestown was in discussions with the county. We got any feedback from the county or their commitment to assist in procuring additional water rights?
Their feedback is they're all in. You know, I think they've spent something like $1 million on the existing well, consultation from Robinson Noble, working with Department of Ecology. They do have some requests for us to be a little more lenient on our existing policy related to, you know, expansion of our retail water service area boundary. And as you know, we're in discussions with them right now and just preliminary discussions, basically outlining our interests, our mutual interests. So moving forward, I expect that they're fully committed to pursuing this water right application.
The interlocal agreement, the discussion over the memo of understanding, and so on, that was before they got this Jamestown position on that. So I'm kind of wondering if that does want influence in some way. Well, anyway, just all hypothetical.
Well, stay tuned for more. Like I mentioned here, we'll be setting up this task force. And, you know, I think this developing of, you know, mutual interests, understanding each other's mutual interests and working forward towards a common goal is something that's in the district's best interests, in the tribe's best interests. And I think the county and ecology are going to be on board.
Well, good. So, Sean, how much of it? We've got our meeting with the LUD participants. We're on the 12th.
Wednesday.
So, this information will be put out as well as the background on the memo of understanding and so on.
That's right, yeah. So, we're going to be basically given a general background history. How did we get to here? Some information specific to the pros and cons of some of the scenarios that have been thrown out there. We're looking for a lot of feedback from our customers.
Yeah, a whole lot of these good comments.
Yep. Both existing customers as well as potential new customers that are outside of the existing retail service area. So we're looking forward to that and looking forward to feedback and input from the commissioners as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Sir.
And that meeting is on Wednesday at 5. I'm just confirming, are both of you planning to attend in person for that Wednesday meeting?
I am.
Yeah. It's hard to make commitments lately, but yeah, I plan on being there.
Okay.
Okay, thanks, Lauren. That's great.
Very good.
All right, moving on to board action items. Steve, did we capture anything?
Yes, basically we captured all about the preparing a letter to BPA regarding the October 7th West End outage for providing an advance letter to the commissioners and a copy to the legislators and the legislative delegation, as well as the McCall Council. We also were requested to ask BPA to perform a root cause analysis and interim fix while still focusing on the long-term second line, the possibility of that. That's what I have.
Great. Sounds good. Anything to add from the board?
No, I think she did a good job.
Great. Thank you, T. It's great. All right. Moving on to comments from the public. Raise your hand or contact T and we'll receive your comment. Wow. Okay. Not seeing any. We do not have an executive session, so if there's no other business to come before the board, we stand adjourned. See you Wednesday.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you.